Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I am your host, Jeff Nadeau. We are back and better than ever with another week and another sit down. We got another great episode planned for you today. As always, if you enjoy this podcast, make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave us a review and a five-star rating. It really helps out our podcast platform. Another great week, another fun week. It's always a great time doing this show, you know, and I've really become immersed again over the last year or so in mafia culture and mafia history, and it's great. I am on my own today. It was an executive decision, and it was one that I had to make. It's not that I don't love blackjack. It's not that I don't love our guests, but I felt like this topic was for me to delve into and really give you the vivid description of what Philadelphia was in the 90s. And this is going to be a really interesting episode. We're going to talk about John Stanfa. We're going to talk about John Vesey. He's really going to be the crux of this episode. And we're going to talk about the war between Stanfa and a younger group of hoods that really didn't back down from each other. Vesey would ultimately be the wild card in this situation. And really, it would all come down to brothers, family being involved. And to this day, is still a very contentious back and forth. So we're going to get into all that and more. As always, also make sure you give us a follow on Twitter. You know, every week I try to, I think when you create a podcast, it's important that you have multiple levels of sharing that. So you have the Twitter, you have the show, you have a YouTube, all that stuff is important. And I urge you to go follow us on Twitter. We tweet out show stuff. We tweet out facts about the mob. We interact with other people in the space. And on YouTube, I'm very proud of what we've been able to do on YouTube. We are getting closer and closer to 2,000 subs. And we've been able to really build up a nice YouTube channel as well, where, you know, I'm sharing little smaller stories about the mob, and it's just really been a fun go of it. So make sure you support some of our sponsors as well. Let's get into a great episode. We're going to talk about Philadelphia. And as I said, this show per se is going to be about John Vesey. I'm really going to get into the vivid detail of his life and really how he got in to a situation that's really untenable. And how he was involved with really one of the most perilous times in this city from an organized crime standpoint. You know, when we look back on Philadelphia, Angelo Bruno obviously ruled until 1980, you know, and then there was a lot of who's going to take over. The main thought was it was going to be Philip Testa. And it was. Testa takes over. He has his son coming up in the wings. Everybody seems okay. Nicky Scarfo is kind of moving around. Eventually, Testa gets blown up by Peter Casella, who is an underling trying to take over control of the family. Casella gets shelved, and then Nicky Scarfo assumes control. And the good thing for Nicky Scarfo was he had the backing of New York. We all know what went into Nicky Scarfo. I urge you, if you're not real familiar with Nicky, unlike other families, the five families, there are so many stories throughout the vast history of Cosa Nostra. But in Philadelphia, it's one city, it's one family, and it's really a consolidated group, right? You had Bruno, then Scarfo, then, you know, obviously the Stanfa wing, and then the Merlino era. So when we get to kind of the present day of where this show is going to start, it's the late 80s, early 90s, and Nicky Scarfo and his crew get jammed up. Most of them go away, and there's a real power vacuum at the top of the Philly mob. And this is where John Stanfa comes into play. Now, Stanfa, and I urge you, we will get into Vesey, but I want to kind of just set the stage. Stanfa was an old school guy. He had actually been born in Sicily, in Cacamo, Sicily. Cacamo is not far from the town center of Palermo. And John Stanfa comes over in his early 20s. He settles in New York and then moves to Philadelphia in the 60s. And he's kind of connected through the Sicilian wing of the Gambino crime family to Angelo Bruno. he becomes his driver, one of his people. And then, as you remember, in 1980, at the corner of 10th and Snyder, the house is obviously still there. John Stanfa and Bruno pull up after a dinner at Cousins Little Italy. They're sitting there, and a gunman comes up and blows Bruno away in front of his home. Now, that night, John Stanfa walked away with no scratch. He was good to go. And a lot of people have always wondered, was John Stanfa involved in this murder behind the scenes? Now, ultimately, Anthony Caponegro, who was the consigliere, was trying to make a play to take over the family, and he would end up being killed, weeks later. So Scarfa takes over. That whole nutty ring goes on. And remember, we did an episode way back on Nicky Scarfa. We had the great Scott Berenstein on the show. He came on to talk about the life and times of Nicodemo, little Nicky Scarfa. I think that was episode 2. I mean, it was way back, one of our first episodes that we did. So let's get into John Vesey, who is really the catalyst for this time. And we'll kind of piece the story together as we go on. John Vesey was born in 1967. Now, at that time, Philadelphia, particularly in South Philadelphia, there are three neighborhoods really that we need to understand. Okay, so the Italian Mafia is really based off of, let's say, Broad and Snyder. Okay, so when we look west or east, really up into 20th Street, that was the mob's kind of area. Now, above Washington Avenue, that was more of Black and Asian area territory. And then everything east of 7th Street was Irish territory. So John Vesey actually grew up at 5th and Christian, 5th and Washington, which was housing projects. It was not a good area. It was where poor people lived. It was a lot of poverty, a lot of strife. And John Vesey grew up in a family of five. His mother was a good Sicilian woman, according to him. She was a great mom, and she actually told him a story. But when he was younger, the day he was born, John's father had always been estranged from their family. And his mother would tell a young Vesey at the time that when the day he was born, his father actually started a beef with her over he thought she was cheating on him with one of the doctors. He took young John home. She took young John home, and they were around the house. And the elder Vesey attempted to light the home on fire and stab her with a meat cleaver. And from that day on, the mother never saw Walter Vesey again. Now, John would contend later in his life that his mother was Sicilian. His father was half Italian, half either Indian or Irish. He doesn't exactly know. But it was easy enough to say John Vesey was Italian. He grew up in an Italian neighborhood, and he would talk pretty openly about his childhood. It wasn't easy. They didn't have much money. His mother did what she could by working odd jobs to really kind of support them. He would wear tattered clothes, clothes that didn't fit the school, but he would really be close with his brother, Billy. Billy Vesey was older than him. He was someone that he looked up to. Billy was a fighter, as was John. And he really looked at him as a surrogate father, and they were thick as thieves. They boxed together. They moved around in the streets together. They knew the same people, but Billy would kind of take a different tact in his life. Billy would eventually get a job, and he would kind of have his own home and really kind of took a different kind of track than his brother. But he'd always told John, you know, stay out of the streets, you know, but he was really brought into it at an early age. John will, quote, say we had, quote, nothing. We lived off of welfare, and my mother did what she could. By his early teens, John Vesey struggled mightily in school. He had major issues with learning disabilities, and by age 13, he was palling around with his older family members, his uncles and cousins, and they were getting him into illicit drugs. He was having sex at a very early age. And by 1982, at 15, John Vesey had already fathered two children. So he was getting started very early. He was doing what he had to do to support himself and his kids. He would leave Furnace High School in Philadelphia after he was arrested for pulling a knife on a teacher. and assaulting classmates. So he was a dropout, a high school dropout. And he had to face his life that he was in a tough neighborhood with very little prospects. And in that neighborhood, he was drug addicted and he needed to support his habit. So you know, he was moving around in boxing gyms. He was good with his hands. He would say that by the age of 30, he had been in 1,000 fights in his life. He had been stuck. He had been beat up. He had been messed with. And by 30, he had been arrested over 60 times. In fact, at one point, VC would say that he had been hit so many times in the head with pipes and bats that doctors told him he had a protective layer of calcium under and on his skull. So like he was beaten up so many times, he wasn't completely there. You had to wonder, you have to wonder today, does John VC have CTE? You have to wonder. This is a guy that in my life of studying organized crime, you know, for everything we can say bad about John VC, there's one thing that I think no matter who you are, no matter what you think of him, there's one thing you can say. John VC was a tough motherfucker. Okay. This is a guy, he's really like, if you've ever seen Gomorrah, Ciro DiMarzio, he's immortal. He can't be killed. The guy's a nut. He's a lunatic. And I know people that, and obviously he was before my time, but you know, you get to know people that have been around a long time than you. And they told me straight up, John Vesey was the toughest motherfucker in this neighborhood. It's that simple. And he developed a bit of a reputation. By 1983, in the early 80s, John's family got some bad news. His mother would find out that her father, John's grandfather, Dante, had passed away. Now, Dante was a fixture in the 9th Street neighborhood of South Philadelphia. He owned a bakery at 9th and Federal. They had terrific baked goods and things of that nature, a little bit of a general store, if you will. He was a well-known baker in the area. And at that point, and by the way, 9th and Federal is really right next to Gino Steaks, right across the street from Capitolo Park. At that point, John's mother takes over the bakery. She starts working there. However, she starts moving around in the drug trade. She starts selling methamphetamine out of that bakery to make more money. She did what she had to do for her kids. And she would start to move around with an individual called Jumbo John DeSalvo. Now, DeSalvo was a close associate of Long John Martorano. And if you know anything about Long John, he was one of Angelo Bruno's chief people. Long John is probably the most prolific methamphetamine dealer in the history of this city. And he was financing not only drugs in the mafia, but he was peddling drugs to the Philadelphia Junior Black Mafia, the K&A gang up in Kensington, different motorcycle clubs. He was the middleman for methamphetamine with P2P cooks. Like he was the guy. And she gets involved with DeSalvo, who in 1984, the Pennsylvania Crime Commission would identify DeSalvo as a main associate of the Philadelphia Mafia. And he had been a long time associate. She gets jammed up in 83 in a federal probe involving selling meth. Long John gets jammed up, DeSalvo gets jammed up, and Sophie Vesey gets jammed up. Now, she would face trial. However, on September 27th, 1983, Vesey's mother, Sophie, would die of a heart attack at the age of 41. So this would be another terrible notch in VC's life. He didn't have a father. He had a broken home. He didn't have much money growing up. His mother did what she could. She was really his only support system. And in interviews after the fact, he's discussed, you know, he loved his mother to death. She was his rock. And she died and he really had nothing at that point. John Vesey in 1983 was 16, 17 years old. And by his late teens, he was taking it out on the streets. John was addicted to drugs at this point. He had to feed his habit. And the only way he knew to feed his habit was robbing people, sticking people up, sticking up drug dealers, doing what he had to do to survive. And he would talk about regularly going up to the Badlands in North Philadelphia and buying heroin and cocaine. And he was an addict. He had a major problem. And as I said, by his mid-20s, early 30s, John Vesey had been arrested, you know, 60-ish times. The police knew who he was. They knew he was a tough guy. His brother did what he could to help him, but it wasn't easy. It's hard when you have a family member that you can't necessarily control. By 1991, it would all come to a head for John Vesey. He would actually get jammed up in a state case involving robbery and assault. And he would get some time upstate. He would head up to SCI Frackville. And this would actually come out many years down the road in his testimony. As we know, he was a drug addict. And the prosecutor in the case actually asked him about his drug use, you know, and asked him, you know, what happened? You know, did you kick the habit? How did it go? And he would talk about how at Frackville, he was doing heroin regularly, when one day he just decided he wasn't going to do heroin anymore. And according to him, from that day on, he was clean. So, you know, that's one thing that John Vesey was able to kick. The fact that, you know, he was a drug addict and, you know, he had to, for his kids and for his future, give it up. But after doing pretty much 2 years upstate, John Vesey in 1993 would be released from state prison. And he would head back to Philadelphia with really an uncertain future. Obviously, he was a tough kid. He didn't have much, though. He had kids, and he had no real future. He had to go out and get a job, because in Pennsylvania, the state parole system requires you to have gainful employment. So through his parole officer, John Vesey gets hired with a concrete construction company, a place called CNC Concrete. Now, CNC was owned by a family member of John Stanfa. Stanfa was very much involved in construction. He had construction companies, and one of them was loosely CNC Concrete. So John goes and start working there. He gets $350 a week. He's breaking his back, lifting blocks and all sorts of stuff. And that's when he catches the attention of an individual called Frank Martinez. Frank Martinez was the underboss to John Stanfa. He was a guy from the neighborhood, actually was from, I believe, 10th and Morris, that area, not far from where the bakery that Sophia Vesey owned. Everybody knew everyone. To this day, everybody knows everybody, mostly in South Philly, if you've lived there your whole life. Martinez knew who Vesey was. He was a tough kid. He obviously needed to catch some breaks. He approaches Vesey about, hey, I see you're a tough young kid. The Stanfa regime needed young enforcers. They were dealing with this brash group of young Turks that were jumping into the territory. And I think Stanfa envisioned that, hey, we're going to need some people in our corner here. We're going to need younger people. And he was out almost consulting for younger guys. Martinez catches VC out on the job site and says, hey, why don't you come speak to John? We got something we want you to do for us. They go and see John Stanfa, and Stanfa orders VC basically $10,000 if he kills Joey Merlino. Now, Joey Merlino is a young, brash kid in the early 90s, the son of a mobster himself. He led a rival organization in Philadelphia that really kind of looked down upon Stanfa. They didn't respect Stanfa. He was an old school mustache Pete, if you will, from Sicily. He didn't know the new world. And this younger group wanted to take over, and they were not going to, you know, step down to John Stanfa. So Stanfa organizes a group that's basically off Joey Merlino, who, you know, at the time was in his young 30s. He was kind of that, you know, golden child, if you will. So he goes to Vesey and says, look, I'll give you 10 G's if you take care of this kid. And at the time, Vesey said, look, I had nothing. You know, giving me 10 grand was like a million. And he asked, you know, Stanfa, where's the gun? You know, he was ready to do it. And in a 60 Minutes interview he would do, the interviewer would ask him, you know, that seems kind of crazy. You know, for 10 grand, you're willing to kill someone, you know. Someone with morals wouldn't do that. And he basically said, well, look, I didn't have any morals at that point. I grew up in the gutter. You know, I didn't have any ethics or morals. I had just come out of prison. I wasn't making any money. 10 grand, keep in mind, in the early 90s, I mean, 10 grand for someone making $350 a week, that's a lot of money. So he agrees. At that point, Martinez connects him with another young hood, Philip Coletti. Now, Coletti was a neighborhood, kid as well that was known to be good with his hands. And Stanford was attracting all these younger kids, Coletti, VC. And they go on the prowl. They start hunting skinny Joey Merlino. Now, remember, there are many people involved in the mob at the time in Philly. Now, on the Stanford side, there were certain people from certain families, literally blood families. And then in the Merlino regime, there were certain members on one side as well. So like there was a lot of inner strife. It's a small city. You cross paths. It was a wild time. So let's go to April 5th, 1993. They're very much trying to get to Joey Merlino. VC and Coletti. They're trying to plan all these ideas. The one idea was we'll put a bomb in his car. That didn't happen. There was an idea to go to a club that Merlino would frequent and dress up Philip Coletti's wife, Brenda, in some sort of skimpy outfit and slip cyanide into a drink she would serve Joey, which that was shot down by Coletti, who didn't want his wife involved. They would finally catch up to Merlino at a clubhouse at 6th and Catherine Streets in South Philly. Merlino and his group are holding court. It was a nice day in April. They're holding court on the street in front of the clubhouse. VC spots Joey. They also spot an individual, Michael Cengolini, who was one of Joey's people. The problem that VC would talk about is also at 6th and Catherine that day was his older brother, Billy VC. He would say to Coletti, we can't do this now. My brother's right there. We can't do this. So they would kind of circle the block and wait for Merlino to kind of walk away from that situation. At that point, they start unloading on Cengolini and Joey Merlino. Joey Merlino is struck in the buttocks. Cengolini is killed that day on 6th and Catherine. And at that point, a war breaks out. They hit first. The problem in this attempted hit was John Stanfa wanted Merlino. Obviously, Cengolini was part of it, but he wanted Merlino. So they didn't succeed at doing what they had to do. And what happens is both sides start complaining, VC and Stanfa. VC's not getting paid. He was told that he'd be paid a certain amount of money. But remember, he hadn't taken care of the job that he was asked to take care of. And Staff had, complained about everything, basically, at that point. He was always in a bad mood. He was always warring with somebody. And he didn't like this younger group. Keep in mind, on August 31st, 1993, the other side would hit back. John Stanfa and his son would be driving in a car on the Schuylkill Expressway when a gunman basically pulled up alongside them on a busy highway in the middle of the day. It just started shooting into the car. Joey Stanfa, John's son, took some hot ones, and they basically were going back and forth. There was wild shit going on the streets of Philadelphia between the Stanfa and Young Hood crew. It was a war. It was a wartime. Now, John Stanfa wanted Merlino, but there were other things going on at the time. John VC was starting to make more money. He was starting to do some things, but he still wasn't making the kind of money he needed. There was also a story that would come up that was actually quite, in the grand scheme of gangster ethos, it was quite a legendary one. John VC would talk about a story where he was doing business with an individual called Joe Fudge, DeSimone. And he had heard through other people that Joe Fudge was talking subversive about him. He calls an associate, Johnny Gong's Casa Santo, and says, bring this fucking Joe Fudge to me. Casasanto agrees, brings him to John VC. VC starts going to town on him with a drill. And VC would talk about he drilled his kneecaps, his elbows, and started drilling into his head And he talked about seeing pieces of hair fly out as he was drilling into his head. Now, obviously, this was a ploy to just scare DeSimone, and it did. I believe he fled the area after this. But this is the kind of lunatic that John Vesey was turning into. He was immortal, and he was a lunatic psychopath. So there was a lot of things going on, not only during a war, but there was crazy things going on in the streets of Philly. Now, remember as well, you know, John's brother Billy is also kind of involved in this, but trying to stay and do his own thing and live his own life. John Stanford would call on John Vesey to do another hit, and this would really be his final one, and this would really be the most notorious in the war. They were going at each other, and Stanford recognized that an individual called Frank Baldino needed to go. Now, Baldino was a known Philadelphia bon vivant. Everybody knew who he was. He was, you know, kind of a reputed guy that was hanging around the Merlino crew. He was a bartender. Everybody knew him. Frankie Bronze, they called him. Stanford tells Vesey he's got to go. And Vesey would mention behind the scenes that after the fact, he actually really liked Baldino. A lot of people liked Baldino. He was likable. People enjoyed him. As I said, he was a bartender. Everybody knew who he was. So they found out that on September 17, 1993, they found out that Frank Baldino was at the Melrose Diner in South Philly, one of the most famous eateries in Philly. They have good food. I've been there many times. It's right on 15th and Snyder. Big, bright building right off Passyunk. They find out he's in there eating dinner, chop steak. They wait for him outside. He gets into his car. John walks up, and he knew Frank. They knew each other. He asked Frank, "Yo, Frank." Frank lowers the window. John shoots him six times and kills him, and he dies in the seat of his car in the parking lot of the Melrose Diner. Now, this sends shockwaves because, again, remember, the diner faced the street. There were people everywhere. This was a very public hit, if you will. And everybody knew who it was that did it. Around this point, the war continues. Other people are dying. There was a hit upon a luncheonette that John Stanford owned up off the Schuylkill Expressway, where a waitress was killed. Another individual was killed. It was just back and forth. And again, the FBI, the police department were trying and doing their best to stop this wild shit that's going on. But by the mid-90s, John Vesey is becoming disillusioned with not only his boss, but the mafia in general. Remember, John had been made by this point. He wasn't fully Italian, but he was made. John Stanford made him. John didn't have a ton of people around him, so he made Vesey. And Vesey's doing things. He's making money, but he's not being paid most of the time. And Stanford's just going off the deep end. He's going nuts. And he starts talking subversive about Stanford. And Stanford gets wind of it and orders Vesey to be killed. Billy Vesey contacts his brother and says, "Look, we need to see you. I need to talk to you. I'm going to bring your lawyer. We need to sit down and talk." Look, Billy Vesey knew the streets. Okay, it's that simple. He knew that there was one way out and one way this was going to end. Vesey was a marked man by both the other side and Stanford himself. He had no friends anymore. He had no emissaries. The only emissary he had at this point basically was his brother, Billy, who was trying to play cool with both. So they go and have breakfast. And Billy tells John, "Look, I think you should go to the FBI. I think you should cooperate. There's no other way out for you. What are you going to run? You have no money. You're not going to live forever on the run. They're going to get you at some point. Take your bullshit, deal with what you have to deal with. But this is better than going out in a body bag because you know he's going to kill you. You cannot live it forever." And that's when he decides in 1994 to go to the feds. Now, I want to get into a very wild, this is the kind of person John Stanford was. And I want to kind of have you understand who he is and what he was about. And this is why, for VC, no matter how tough he was, it was not going to last if he stayed on the street. Stanford hated him at that point. Stanford hated everybody. There was a situation in 1992 when the famous TV reporter Geraldo Rivera came to Philadelphia to film his Geraldo at Large story. And he decides, Geraldo, to go to John Stanford's business and try to film him. Stanford was the boss at the time. And Stanford goes up to the business, knocks on the door, and Stanford screams, "Get out of here," and chases Rivera out of the warehouse, screaming at him and slamming the door in his face. At that point, Geraldo kind of takes the cue and leaves. An individual called Gaetano Tommy Horsehead Scafidi would testify that John Stanford came to him right after that little stunt and said, quote, this is Stanford, quote, "If that spick ever comes back, we're going to make sure he never leaves this town alive," end quote. He also would say, "I want you to hit him like the mob carries out hits in Italy with gunmen on motorcycles." Scafidi would respond, quote, "This isn't Italy. With all due respect, we can't kill reporters." Stanford would reply, quote, "I don't give a fuck." Now, Stanford, this was not the only person he would attempt to kill. He would also put a hit out on famed reporter George Anastasia. He would tell his underling to throw grenades into George Anastasia's home. He also wanted to whack an individual called Kitty Caparella, who worked for the Philadelphia Daily News. He wanted to kill her, too. He didn't like reporters. And John Stanford really acted like this was the Wild West and this was Italy. And it wasn't. So that's the kind of person John Stanford was. John Vesey was not going to get away with his disloyalty, according to Stanford. So Peter Scuderi and Billy Vesey persuade John to go to the FBI. And in 1994, he goes and visits the FBI and meets Special Agent Paul Hayes, who takes him in. And basically, John says, look, I know I'm going to have to go to jail for some of the shit that I've done. You know, I'm going to stay on the street for a certain amount of time, but you know, I know I'm going to have to go to jail. And he had basically accepted that, but he knew that he would cooperate, but it would be secret. And he would probably get out after a couple of years and be good. So what they would do is they would put him back on the street. They kept it all secret and they would wire up VC, and VC would regularly be around Stanford. Stanford was making it known that he would kill VC, but he wasn't ready to do it. So John was still trying to maintain being a good soldier and whatever. So he went and visited him at the hospital and different things where he was. And they caught him on tape talking about a situation in 1992 when, this is also how nutty John Stanford was. There was an individual in the Stanford faction called Biagio Adornetto. Adornetto was an old school Sicilian guy that John brought over to work for him. John had a daughter, Sarah, who was beautiful. She was a model. That's how beautiful she was. Adornetto wanted to date her. Stanford shot it down and said no. Adornetto kept at it, and they had Adornetto killed. And John basically admitted to this on wiretap. So John VC's cooperation and ability to testify, plus wear a wire, was really starting to pay off. And while this is all happening, I think the Merlino crew is just kind of sitting back and saying, well, this guy's going to hang himself. We'll kind of buy our time and wait. In January of 1994, one of the last legends of John Vesey would be told. It was time for John Vesey to go, according to Stanford. And he would send Frank Martinez, the individual who would ultimately connect Vesey and Stanford several years before. He would send Martinez and an individual called Vincent Alpajamas Pagano to kill VC. And they had a apartment on 7th and Siegel Streets set up to have him killed in. They run up on VC and say, look, we gotta go have a sit down. We gotta talk. VC complies, gets in the car. I think he kind of realized at that point, this probably isn't good for me. They take him to 7th and Siegel Streets. they walk up to the apartment, and John mentioned that when he walked in, he saw like painting tarps everywhere. So like nothing could get on the floors. And he said he pretty much knew at that point. They proceed to shoot John Vesey. You know, basically they told him, look, you're dead tonight. They proceed to shoot him. They shoot him 3 times in the head, 2 times in the chest. John Vesey somehow survives. He fights them off, goes out into the street, and is found by the police. The cops were told by the doctors, quote, we didn't expect him to live. He'd been filled up. This guy had been bandaged and had tubes attached to him. This guy was, you couldn't kill him. He was immortal. And that was it. They took him into custody at that point. And John Vesey went and started serving his prison sentence after he was able to recuperate. But he knew that down the road, when the indictment came down on John Stanfa, he would have to testify. And that was going to be really the rubber meeting the road, right? On March 17th, 1994, John Vesey would be called on down the road. Stanfa will be indicted on labor racketeering, extortion, loan sharking, murder, and conspiracy to commit murder. So John was ready to go. He knew that in a few months, he would have to take the witness stand and testify. And at that point, once Stanfa is indicted, the other faction takes over and does what they have to do. Now, the last really terrible point in this situation would come in October. The trial was set to begin that week, October 5th, 1995. And John Vesey was in a secret location. And he had told his brother, Billy, you got to get out of Philadelphia. Like, you're my brother. You're hemmed up here. Everybody knows who you are. Stanfa knows who you are. He could send someone after you. You know, the other side knows who you are. You know, I'm a cooperator, basically. You need to get out of Philly. Billy would respond, quote, I ain't no pussy. I ain't going anywhere. And he didn't. On October 5th, 1995, it was a cold, raw, rainy day in South Philadelphia. And Billy Vesey lived on the 2600 block of South Bouvier Street. Now, Bouvier Street, it's a narrow little street. It's a nice little street between Argonne Avenue and Chunk Street. It borders Argonne Avenue. And Argonne Avenue is a main thoroughfare from basically the expressway to Delaware Avenue. And it's, you know, a street that's very residential. A lot of people live on it. So that day, Billy Vesey decides he's going to go down to Dunkin' Donuts down on 18th Street and get a cup of coffee and some donuts. He gets into his car and he's driving his GMC Jimmy down Bouvier Street. As he crosses to Argonne Avenue, two gunmen run out and shoot him 9 times. And his car rolls in to a home on Argonne Avenue and he dies at the scene. Billy Vesey, a recovered gun would be recovered on his hip, as well as $1,500 in cash. And really to this day, no one has been convicted of his murder. Now, there were certain members of the other side that were indicted on this, including an individual called John Cengolini. Now, obviously that name makes our ears perk up because Michael Cengolini had been killed several years before. And many people in the streets wondered, you know, brother for a brother, was this what that was? There's also a lot of people that would contend that this could have been someone from the Stanfa group that, you know, took care of Billy Vesey because of his cooperation. But there's also another theory, and I want you to hear this. Billy Vesey was not completely out of the streets. Billy Vesey was a bookmaker. Okay, a big bookmaker. He had been encroaching on other people's territories. It would have not been out of the question that someone filled him up that day. Now, again, the timing would insinuate. If you ask me, I've always believed it was someone from the Stanfa group, but you know, they were persuading him not to testify. This is not a random thing in Philadelphia. Witnesses have always had problems, particularly federal witnesses in big cases, have always had problems staying safe. This city doesn't particularly the FBI, does not do a good job protecting them. And they've had to really do a better job over the years because they've had a lot of big time problems with that. But Billy Veazey was dead, and the police had to tell John Veazey this as he was about to take the stand, incredibly enough. Back to Billy just for one second. Actually, in the 90s, in the late 90s, there would be a trial involving the other faction of this group, the Young Turks. And the boss that would take over for Stanford was said to be an individual called Ralph Natale. Natale was kind of the mouthpiece for the Merlino group. And he would flip years later. He would tell the FBI that he instructed that faction to kill Billy Veazey. Now, whether we believe him or not, he was very unreliable. So it's believable that he wasn't telling the truth. But, you know, no one has ever been found guilty of Billy Veazey's crime and murder. So, like I said, I've always believed that it was the Stanford group trying to silence John Veazey. It didn't work, though. John Veazey, several days later, would take the stand against John Stanford. And that was the end for John Stanford. If you know anything about testimony, whether you believe a rat or not, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better witness than John Veazey, quite honestly. He was incredibly effective, incredibly effective. And anyone that heard his testimony would tell you that. John Veazey realized that John Stanford had no care for him. He didn't care about his feelings. They poisoned him, he basically said. I don't lose sleep over it, he said. And it's interesting because his testimony was really just kind of incredible, right? There was a situation where Brian McMonigle, the defense attorney, would cross-examine Veazey in the court, and he would ask Veazey, quote, "What do you wear glasses for?" Veazey would respond, quote, "After I got shot in the head by your client, my right eye is a little bad." And no one was able to battle John Veazey. He was a very effective witness. And one juror would tell the Philadelphia Inquirer, it was like he was standing on a corner telling a story. He was sincere. He was down to earth. He was very believable. And it worked. It worked like a glove for the feds. He was an incredibly effective witness. And on July 9th, 1996, after being found guilty in late 1995, John Stanford would be sentenced to life in prison after he was convicted on 33 of the 35 counts. The jury just believed John Stanford. It was that simple. Seven associates also would get life sentences, including Frank Martinez. He is actually still alive and serving time in prison. John Stanford is still alive as well. He's in his his early 80s. He's up at FMC Devens. He's, I believe, got health issues as far as I know. As far as the other individual, Al Pajamas Pagano, he got 80 years and was released in 2019. He's kind of, I guess, living under his name and probably will die very soon. So that was that. The Stanford organization was out, and John Veazey was in the witness protection program. Now it was, where do I go now? And what happens now, right? John Stanford would obviously go away, but Veazey would actually get 10 years. He would still have to serve time for his involvement in his crimes. He would actually have some major problems in prison. And he would talk about many times that he was going to get the people back that killed his brother. And the FBI would have to persuade him, you know, your brother died for this. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it. You have to live in his honor. But to this day, I think John Veazey is still absolutely lost when it comes to this. He wants retribution. He would claim, and he'll tell you that he's changed. But you look at his police record in prison, his prison record. In the federal system, John Veazey was involved in over 100 infractions. And there was a situation in prison where he stabbed an inmate with a broomstick handle in 2004. This is a guy that has an issue, has a temper. And if you look at his witness protection life, he's been arrested four different times. he's also had some really disturbing situations where he's went to Philadelphia. He's been caught sending text messages and voicemails to different families that he believes has played a part in the role of his brother's killing. Now, whether he believes he has, the right person, I don't think. But John Vesey is regularly around Philadelphia. He does interviews. He comes back and speaks at schools. He would also quote his favorite mob movie is Goodfellas, but he hated Black Mass. He said Johnny Depp sucked as the role of Whitey Bulger. I don't agree with that, but that's his life now. Ultimately, the Philly mob is always in disarray. There's always crazy stuff going on. Today, John Vesey actually lives somewhere in the Midwest. Last time I heard, he lived in Indiana. I don't know where he is now. He did an interview where he talked about he's got a really good job. He works in the car sales business, and he's won awards for selling cars. He's very involved in his church. He got married again. And he said that he won't ever do anything because he, quote, doesn't want to hurt Norma, his wife. He's now in his 50s and has hepatitis C that he got as a kid. So, all in all, it's a life that John Vesey has to constantly look over his shoulder. The question is, will he always contend that he's moved on from all of this? His brother was killed because of all this. He thinks certain people did it. Never know what he'll end up doing. I don't know if I'd buy it. I think if you know anything about VC, he is a tough dude. I think he's willing to go down with a fight. But we'll never know. Has he changed? Who knows? If you look at his arrest record, it surely doesn't seem like he has. But I guess we'll have to see. Whether it is and whether it's not, John VC is a street legend, whether you agree with his behavior or not. Obviously, he became a cooperator. I've always been one of these people that have said, look, I don't like people that cooperate. I think it's the coward's way out. I think it's the way that you basically leave excuses for the things that you did. You had no problem taking the money, but now you want to give it up and tell on everybody. I think every case, though, in the cooperation stuff is case to case. Now, I think there are certain, maybe one or two, that I guess I agree with it. Was John Vesey a mobster? No. He was a hood. He was a street hood. John Stampin never should have brought him around. He was a good enforcer, but the John Stampa that we got to know in the street that we've read about was a lunatic, a raving lunatic. And, John Vesey got into a situation that really took him to the arms of the FBI. So a wild story nonetheless. It was a wild time in the early 90s in Philadelphia. There were murders, there was strife, there was retribution, there was disloyalty. It was that and more. As always, I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you want more mob content, make sure you listen to all of our episodes. We are into the 40s now, episode-wise. As I said, make sure you follow us on YouTube where you can get more great mob content and on Twitter at the Sitdown 7. I am Jeff Nadeau. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. I felt like it was the right episode for me to take at it alone. We'll be back next week with another great mafia history story. See you next time here on The Sit Down.